Isaiah 53. It is fascinating to me that in the Jewish synagogue, every word of the Old Testament, what they say is the scriptures, are read once a year. But when Isaiah 53 is read, it is the middle of the night, the early hours of the morning, at a time when no one is there, because there is so much hope that anyone who honestly looks at these words will see Jesus revealed in them. Here is what God said over 600 years before Jesus' birth. Who has believed our message? And to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? He grew up before him like a tender shoot, like a root out of dry ground. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and familiar with suffering. Like one from whom men hide their faces, he was despised, and we esteemed him not. Surely he took up our sorrows, our iniquities, and carried our sorrows. Yet we considered him stricken by God, smitten by him, and afflicted. He was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him, and by his wounds we are healed. We all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each one of us has turned to his own way. The Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed and afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before her shears is dumb, so he did not open his mouth. By oppression and judgment he was taken away, and who can speak of his descendants? For he was cut off from the land of the living. For the transgression of my people he was stricken. He was assigned a grave with the wicked and with the rich in his death, although he had done no violence, nor was there any deceit in his mouth. Yet it was the Lord's will to crush him and cause him to suffer. And though the Lord makes his life a guilt offering, he will see his offspring and prolong his days. And the will of the Lord will prosper in his hand. After the suffering of his soul, he will see the light of life and be satisfied. By his knowledge, my righteous servant will justify many, and he will bear their iniquities. Therefore, I will give him a portion among the great, and will divide the spoils with the strong. Because he poured out his life unto death and was numbered with the transgressors. For he bore the sin of many and made intercession for the transgressors. Can I ask a couple of simple questions this Christmas season? As Isaiah begins this, he says, who has believed our message? Why is it that no one wants to believe the report? Why is it that no one wants to accept the truth? He goes on and he says, he was rejected. Despised, scorned. Why would anyone scorn, despise, or mock God in the flesh lying in a manger. Why would anyone, for any reason, at any time, but the Christmas story is full of his rejection. Luke chapter 2, verse 7, Luke 2:7, tells us what we all know by now. There was no room for him in the inn. No room. But it wasn't just the inn that had no room. His family had no room for him. They came to take charge of him because he had become an embarrassment. His nation had no room for him. Crucify him! Crucify him! The crowd shouted. The students of the Scripture, the very men who claim to be called by God to enlighten the people, had no room for him. Why was it that when these magi come from the east saying, "Where is he who is born the King of the Jews?" that not one Pharisee, Sadducee, priest, high priest, low priest, middle priest, not one lay leader, not one could bother themselves to travel 5 miles to see if it was true. The wise men came 800 miles through deadly territory. They couldn't get out of their chair, walk out to the stables, get on a horse, and ride 5 miles to see if the Messiah had actually come. Why is there no room for him? That's what makes the wise men all the more wondrous. You know, we kind of read over this story, and there were magi, and they... Can you imagine that of all the people in the whole world, this handful of men are some of the only ones in the whole world that are willing to come to seek him? John, writing in his gospel, John chapter 1, verse 11, John 1:11 says he came to his own. He came to his own. He wasn't a stranger. He wasn't an invader. He wasn't an outsider. He came to his own. And when you think about that, if that is referring to the Jews and not all of humanity, and you could take that either way, but if he was speaking of the Jews, they were his own on many levels. First, we are all his own because he made us. All things, Colossians tells us, chapter 1. All things were made by him and for him. We were created for him. Our purpose in existence is for him. But beyond that, if it's referring to the Jews, then not only were they His because He created them, they were His because He redeemed them. He brought them out of slavery to Egypt. Can you imagine the craziness of the Jewish people who would stand in front of Jesus and say, "We've never been slaves"? Are you insane? What's your own doctrinal statement say? We were slaves in Egypt and God brought us out with a mighty hand. Well, then how can you never have been slaves? What's your own history teach you? You were carried off into captivity, into slavery in Babylon. And as Ezekiel chronicles, we sat by the canals and wept year after year. We've never been slaves? And at that very minute, they were slaves to the Romans. They were His because He was the one who redeemed them. But can I go further? Why is there no room for Jesus in Christmas? Now you say, well, that's not fair. The radio's playing Christmas songs and, oh yeah. But we've gotten so bad that even a Christmas tree is seen as somehow unacceptable in a public square because, oh, that's about Christmas. But we have excised Jesus from Christmas. Christmas is about Santa Claus. Saint Nicholas, a 4th century bishop who, because his heart was so transformed by Christ, was appalled about the poor children in his town and would sneak into their houses and leave gifts for them. Long before Franklin Graham and Samaritan's Purse and shoeboxes, St. Nicholas was delivering shoeboxes to poor kids throughout his city. And they said that he was so good at sneaking into homes, they didn't even know how he did it. He must have slid down the chimney. If you could talk to St. Nicholas today, I'm sure he would be appalled that Christmas is about him instead of Jesus. Because that's why he did it. He was just like any other person. He was not that good, but Jesus changed him. Well, Christmas is about lights on the trees. Oh, it's wonderful that we light trees, but it's not the light on the trees that matters. That's a symbol of Jesus. He is the light of the world. As Jesus says in John 12:46, I am the light that has come into the world. It's not about whether the lights are red or blue or green or all white. Or Jesus is the whole of the light. Or why is it? Why is it that Christmas is about giving gifts to each other? Christmas is the only birthday party that you go to where the only person who doesn't get a present is the birthday child. Every other person in the room gets a present except him. Matthew tells us in Matthew 2:11, this about the wise men, those utter exceptions to the rule. Matthew 2:11. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him, and they opened their presents and presented him with gifts, gold and incense and myrrh. They gave them to him.